The government's climate change bill may be the main game today, but there's a raft of legislative changes being drafted in the ministerial wings of Parliament House. After releasing the State of the Environment report last week, the government has committed to sweeping environmental reform and new legislation to protect Australia's ecosystems. And the Federal Environment Minister also promised to respond to the independent review of Australia's key federal environmental law. The review was led by Professor Graham Samuel, who joins you now. Graham Samuel, welcome back to RM Breakfast.
Good morning, Patricia.
Your review of the EPBC Act called for urgent reform to prevent the continued extinction of Australia's plants, animals and ecosystems. How urgent were the recommendations that you made?
About 2 decades overdue. See, the Act has never really operated properly since it was first implemented. There's been 2 reviews, the first of which was the Hawke Review, done by Alan Hawke back in 2010. That was largely ignored by successive governments. Now I've done this review, which was delivered to government in 2020, released very early in 21. The important thing is this, is that we've got the State of the Environment report, we've got my own views expressed in the review, which followed extensive consultation, extensive right around Australia. And clearly, the environment is not being well served. In fact, it's not being served at all properly by the current laws. And I mean the laws not only at the federal level with the EPBC Act, the Environment Protection and Biodiversity Conservation Act, but also our state laws and territory laws. And the fundamental purport of the review was to say it's not working, it's failing. It's failing our environment, therefore it's failing the Australian community. But now is the opportunity to try and get all our laws across Australia into a consistent standard, the standard that we would expect to be able to halt the decline that was revealed in the State of the Environment report that Minister Plibersek released last week at the National Press Club address, and to bring about some element of recovery.
Did you feel like the Morrison government sat on the report after it was released in October 2020? Was there a cherry-picking of recommendations?
If there was cherry-picking, it was few and far between cherries. And I was disappointed in the result of the report. But let me say this, Patricia, my disappointment yesterday at a conference run by the Environment Institute of Australia, I expressed the view that I had moved from a feeling of despair and frustration prior to the election to one of perhaps expectation and elation afterwards. But let's leave my view out of it. In the course of the review, I had 30,000 plus submissions. I had over 100 organisations that I met with. I had a consultative group of 20 organisations, all of which came together and agreed with me that they would work together to bring about the right result with the report, although it was my completely independent report. I had consultation on the National Environmental Standards that formed an essential part of the report. I had a dedicated secretariat in the department. Now, all of these people had a right to be absolutely despairing and frustrated and disappointed as a result of the relative inaction by the former government on the report itself. It offered the solution. And importantly, the consultative group, which spread from Business Council, Minerals Council, Farmers Federation, Property Council, academics, scientists, Indigenous leaders, and a vast raft of conservation groups, all agreed together that this was where we should be going. And interestingly, following the publication of the report, I received so many emails and text messages from those that had been involved in the work, in the consultative work and elsewhere, to say, thank you for the report. Congratulations. This is not only what we expected, it's more than what we expected. So there's a whole raft of people, leaving aside, and this is the only political comment I'll make, 55% of the population that voted for Teal, Greens and Labor at the last election, and I suspect a large section of the remaining 45% that voted for the coalition that said, we want some change. And so I can be forgiven for assuming that, and this is only assumption, that all those people were really saying, why was it that the report wasn't dealt with prior to the election? And they feel some sense of, if I can say, anticipation excited anticipation that it will now be dealt with and that the environment will get the attention it deserves under Minister Plibersek.
Do you know who sat on it, Graham Samuel?
No. My position, having delivered the report, was to just sit back and watch, despair, be frustrated, just hope that something might come through. I just don't know. What I do know is this, Patricia, that of all the groups that I drew together as part of the consultative process post the it was in the final 4 months of the preparation of the report, and we sat down and we agreed that they would work with me in the development of the final report. And I said to them all, don't expect that some of you who have got some extreme, if I like, amber claims, that you get 100% of your aspirations. But if I can get 80%, then that's better than nothing. And everyone agreed. And to have people from as far ranging as at the one end, the Business Council, Mineral Council, and at the other end, I'm talking about in terms of the spectrum of interests, major conservation groups all saying this is more than what we expected. Thank you very much. There were two groups that disagreed, expressed their views about the report in strong terms. One was a member of the Minerals Council. The Minerals Council, Tanya Constable, publicly congratulated us on the report, but the West Australian Chamber of Mines said in an extraordinary, I have to say, gobsmacking statement, that if the report was adopted, there'd be no more mining in Western Australia. Well, I thought that was utter nonsense, frankly.
Yeah.
And you couldn't believe it. And then there were some sections of the National Farmers Federation, a large group of the National Farmers Federation said, yeah, look, this makes an awful lot of sense for the agricultural industry. But there were some sections that said, well, what's in it for us? And my response was to say, this is not about what's in it for you. This is about what's in it for Australia and for the environment. And importantly, it's been designed in a way that it won't cost you, right? And that seemed to me to be the appropriate attitude. But there were some sections that said, well, we want something in it for us. I don't know how that plays out in the political scene, but others can their assumptions.
One challenge facing the new government is how to balance environmental concerns against the future of coal and gas projects. The EPBC Act does not require a minister to consider the climate impacts of fossil fuel projects when deciding whether to give approval. Should fossil fuel projects include a climate trigger, Graham Samuel, that would give the minister the option to block projects if their environmental impact is considered to be highly damaging?
Patricia, this is a really complex issue, and I did discuss it at length during the course of the review with interested parties and members of the Secretariat, who I might say, by the way, and I have to say this, were totally committed to provide an independent, objective report to government, and they assisted me enormously. The Secretariat and the public service were the epitome of what public servants ought to be. But the climate trigger was an issue that was raised. We went as far as this in Recommendation 2, I recommended that applicants for development approvals, for mining approvals, et cetera, ought to at least state in granular detail the impact that their development might have on carbon and carbon emissions and what steps as part of their development process they were going to take to mitigate that impact on carbon. That's a disclosure issue. The question about whether or not a climate trigger ought to be part of the EPBC Act, I think, is a matter ultimately for government, remembering that we've got two different ministers and two different departments dealing with this. Minister Bowen deals with climate. Minister Plibersek deals with the environment. And I think I was persuaded in the end that it was probably better to leave all this in the hands of the climate department, Minister Bowen as it now is, and not to intermingle it with the Environment Act. The problem with intermingling with the Environment Act is that if you put a climate trigger in, what it does is it brings into development and mining proposals another factor, which could be the basis for lawfare, constant legal actions and delays. And it seemed to me that these are policy issues for government that government ought to deal with as part of its climate policy and climate change policy rather than as an adjunct to environment. Now, having said that, I'm trying to sort of give both sides of the argument. Having said that, I did point out to my colleagues in the department that This is not simply about protection of critters, protection of fauna and flora. This is about protection of the environment, because that's what the law says. The law says this is to protect Australia's environment and biodiversity. And in a sense, you can't do that without dealing with carbon and issues
well,
of carbon.
Let's go to that, because the government has ruled out banning fossil fuel projects. The Prime Minister says doing so would have a devastating impact on the Australian economy. Is Australia's economy being prioritised over its environment?
I think the best I can say, and I only see this as I read it in the newspaper, is the government is trying to strike a balance. It has set a 43% target, and as I read in the papers this morning, that 43% target for 2030 may well be a base, a minimum, and capable of potentially being lifted. And I think I've read, but I could be wrong, that Minister Bowen has indicated that the government will be looking at ways of lifting that potential target or the aspirations for 2030 over the next 2 or 3 years. But it's a really complex issue, and I've not studied it carefully enough. It wasn't part of the review to be able to express a view. I think this is a matter for Minister Bowen to work through in conjunction with the Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, because these are fundamental economic issues. Mm. And, we'll just have to wait and see. That's not fair. The vast bulk of the population is getting increasingly anxious about carbon and about climate change. But at the same time, they are at present increasingly anxious about inflation, about the cost of living. And we go through various gyrations. You know, I was thinking over the past couple of years, we've gone through gyration of COVID, fuel prices, inflation, cost of lettuces, cost of living, and the like. And so, you know, we go through this, and we will doubtless move on as time progresses and we begin to realise that interest rates are going to go to a certain level, but not beyond that, although we've got certain economists and banks predicting that they'll go to extraordinary levels and the like. And I think as we move past that crisis of confidence and we start to sort out growth rates and the like, that you know, government will then be in a position to be able to determine what is the appropriate balance. And so I can fully understand why government is adopting the position it's currently adopting, which is saying we will not ban these issues in terms of fossil fuel development and the like, but we've got to balance the economic issues with it.
Professor Graham Samuel, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Patricia.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.